Hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. The shake-up in membership of the Department of Infrastructure continues following the departure of Julie Edge. The Onchan MHK explains why recent decisions by the new minister led to her resignation. And fisheries are in a dire state on the island, with fears the industry might not survive amid a severely depressed market. The latest politician to quit the Department of Infrastructure says she was treated with a lack of respect. Julie Edge tendered her resignation last night after a number of developments, including the imminent closure of Summer Hill. It comes after her departmental responsibility for housing was shifted to incoming member Marlene Masker, MLC. Jason Morehouse, MHK, also left the department earlier this month. Miss Edge insists there's no ill feeling between her and Infrastructure Minister Tim Baker. But she told me she felt mistreated.
It was a situation really that arose when we went into a policy and strategy meeting and the minister announcing that he was bringing an MLC into the department, and virtually straight after that, in front of officers, he said, and she's coming in to do housing. And obviously that was my role. So I did my point clear that I'm the elected member who's doing a high policy area for the department, and I didn't think it was right the way he did it, never mind to bring an MLC in to do a role that an MHK has been doing. And particularly, really, that they shouldn't. I don't believe an MLC, you know, one department's enough, but, you know, to go on to two departments and to sort of want to specify what you do, I don't agree with it. I'm totally against the will of Tynwald, I believe.
So that was the opinion of Tynwald off the back of the debates in Lisvain. Mrs. Masker said she had that advice that said it was fine for her to do that. But just back on the housing thing, why shouldn't an MLC be in charge of housing?
I just feel that it's a high policy area. It touches everybody on the island. It's not just, you know, social housing. It's all housing. It's landlord legislation. And I just feel that you need to be an elected member of Tynwald to be able to get the views of the people that have elected you to make sure the right policy and legislation comes forward.
People might be saying you're getting out of the DOI at what might be a good time ahead of an election, and with all the things that are going on in that department, some of them very unpopular. What do you say to that?
Right, well, you know, I don't agree with that. Obviously, there's a few people have changed in the last few weeks, their roles. They've gone out of departments that they've only been in for a short space of time, and Jason resigned from DOI. The reason that I've done it is, as I've just said, is I don't believe, I'm a principled person about if I've voted on something in Tynwald, that was the will of Tynwald, so I don't agree with that. With regards to the department and all the other issues, my area was performing well. It was probably the main area in the department that was. It was a big budget, £33 million. It never overspent. We were delivering. We were getting projects completed like Clathfane, and bringing forward policy and working with the local authorities. So, I didn't feel there was any reason within my area for the decision taken by the minister. And again, I think that's where perhaps the mistake's been made. It would have been better to discuss with members what the issues were in the department as a whole, rather than trying to bring an MLC in that perhaps wants to be doing the only area that was working effectively.
So do you feel that if you'd have been consulted about a change beforehand, would you have been happy to take on a different responsibility, or were you wanting to keep a hold of housing whatever happened?
No, not at all. And that option was there once I knew I wasn't doing housing. I think there's a lot of policy to come to fruition. I said so. I was disappointed because obviously coming up to an election, which people are thinking, you want to deliver that policy that you've worked hard on for the last 3.5 years. I was disappointed that I'm not going to have that opportunity. But the other areas of the department, you know, I would have had to consider them seriously, because there's serious problems in all of them. So,
well, you mentioned other areas. We got the news through about Summer Hill being closed. you mentioned in your letter, your resignation letter, that was the sort of the final straw. Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah, we do. Obviously, we're on the department, you get to find out some information. The prom's always been treated as a totally separate sort of scheme on its own. I was aware that Summerhill was going to be closing at some point in the future. And we'd been at a meeting in the afternoon, myself with numerous members from Douglas and my colleague from Onchan. And we were talking about the issues at St Ninian's and the backlog of traffic and the problems it was creating for people in Douglas and Onchan. And, you know, there wasn't any emphasis put on, and we're closing Summerhill next week. So although we were trying to find all these solutions, so there's a lot of unhappy MHKs about that announcement that Summerhill is going to be closing from Wednesday.
So that was a surprise to you?
It was a surprise that it was actually happening on that Wednesday, although, you know, dates get mentioned all along. And to be honest, if we're not aware of the date as elected members, what are residents... You know, if we don't know as elected members, the residents certainly don't know that closure was imminent. So,
Well, I have to ask you, do you get on with the new infrastructure minister? Did you?
Yeah. There was no issue. And you know, unfortunately, it seems he's probably been badly advised. I've always worked in a professional environment. I was always in government. I was a civil servant. And there's ways that you deal with things. And I think the lack of respect for both political members in the department to discuss with us the way forward for the future, and to have made these decisions without that, and to have discussed for a couple of weeks with an MLC was just totally out of order.
Well, is this an issue then? If it's not an issue with the minister, who advised the minister? Are you talking about officers here, or?
Well, I don't know that answer. You'd have to speak to him about that. But it seems it was the minister's decision. And I have to respect that's his decision. But I just find it strange. You'd say you're bringing somebody in to help support the department with the challenges ahead, to then give them the area that's actually been working the most effective in the department. So it just seemed like a strange way to go about it. Well, it was, you know, it was dreadful, really. It was handled really badly.
Now, you actually take a financial hit from this as well. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
Was that a big factor in this decision?
Obviously, that's something I had to consider with my family. And, you know, how will we deal with this? Because, you know, I have no other income. I'm like most people, you know, you've got mortgages and you have to provide. I don't believe that you should stay and in a department if it's the wrong place to be at that time. And, it's going to be a big hit. I've said to the Chief Minister, I will go to other areas of government. Let's see whether I'm offered any of that.
Are you going to become a thorn in the DOI side now until the election next year? Because we've seen the case of the former Policy and Reform Minister perhaps been picking up some of his old subjects in Tynwald and discussing them with ministers in questions. Are you going to be looking closely at the DOI now?
I'll be looking closely at what I know was about to be delivered to make sure it's delivered for the people of the island, because without that, I'd feel that the work I've done for the last 4 years working hard for the division would be wasted, and I certainly don't want that to happen. There is a lot of issues that need to be addressed. Communication's a major issue within the department, and I wish the minister well in that, and I'm sure he'll get some... hopefully you'll get a team around them.
Now, housing, we've talked about some of the initiatives that you were bringing forward, like a landlord registration bill, for example. Mm-hmm. There's a consultation out there. Mm-hmm. What was on the horizon for the next year?
Well, obviously that was coming through. That's a big piece of work. Since I was elected, and with the previous minister, I've been trying to work with the local authorities to bring a 5-year fixed rental policy forward. Because one thing I realised going into housing at a very early stage was it gets used by politicians, both local and national, to try and get elected, and they use rents and everything and I found that absolutely...
Does that still go on?
Yes, it does. I've actually had it said to me in the last 12 months, now, Julie, don't be doing that close to an election. And I just thought, this is wrong for the people of the island. They need to know where they stand. The local authorities need to be able to be aware to plan their workload and maintenance. And a 5-year fixed rent set and policy, which, you know, we were onto, but the previous minister was, you know, wasn't keen to push it forward, and I'd hoped with the new minister that would happen. So, you know, that is an area that I do believe for the people of the island it needs to happen, so that it cannot be used as a bargaining tool during election times. Totally wrong.
Well, are you going to use the opportunity of a lot of the discussions that have been taking place about housing in the run-up to the election? Because there was a big debate recently in Timwell where all these issues were brought up again. And it seems every year, just before an election, there's a big housing debate. I mean, how are we going to break deadlock with this? Because there are big issues that people want solving with housing.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of it. You know, there are people out there shouting that there's a lot of issues with housing. What we've done as a division over the last 4 years, we've worked really closely with the local authorities, getting them on board, getting shared waiting lists, reducing waiting lists down by virtually 50% to what they were when I joined. And I think you've got to do a collaborative approach with the local authorities. They're their houses. They can't be taken off them. And, you know, without working closely with them to bring forward change. And, you know, I would have liked to have seen a regionalisation board so that we all work together, but in our regions, within our areas, which is like the shared waiting list. And we were working towards that. And I just hope that still happens, and that the debate that took place to sort of bring housing central policy into the Cabinet Office does not damage that.
Onken MHK, Julie Edge. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The Queen's Scallop fishing season began at the start of this month, but for Manx fishermen, a devastated market means they're selling at 50% below last year's prices. Despite a promising increase in queenie stocks, fewer boats than ever are out this year, according to Dr. Dave Beard, who's the chief executive of the Manx Fish Producers Organisation. A new system is being used this year, with regional management of the four main fishing areas, each with an overall catch limit of 557 tonnes. Dr. Beard explained more about the new system and the general state of the fishery to me.
There's almost a new system being used this year whereby we're looking at regional sort of management of each of the four main fishing areas, setting a catch limit, overall catch limit, but not a strict one, but for each of those areas. We were lucky this year that we got four good fishable areas. That's a bonus. Last year we just had the one area that where fishing was concentrated, and this year we'll be able to fish in four different areas, so that's good. The catch limit of 577 tonnes, I understand it is a flexible limit, and that if we use this new system, whereby we're looking at catch rate, real-time catch rates in each of the four areas, that as long as the catch rate is above a certain threshold, that 577 tonnes can be increased.
This is against the backdrop of an improvement in this stock. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we did the survey this year. The industry did the survey this year because Bangor couldn't come because of COVID. We did a similar survey last year, so we had something to compare it to. Ours is a very high resolution survey. We do an awful lot of surveys, far more than Bangor, who do the historical survey sites. So we've managed to use a system from that Bangor developed or helped with. And basically, we set up the limits of all the fishing areas over the last few years, and then did random sampling in all of those areas. So it's done randomly. So it is a valid sample. So, and this year, the results for the fishable population for the adults was much better than last year.
So it was a success for management of the sector then, in terms of that area.
Provisionally. If the stocks increase, then that's great. But obviously, whenever you're looking at these things, you're looking at a longer time series. But the only data we had, because the industry started their own survey last year, was last year's and this year. So we've got 2 years of data, so we can only compare one against the other. But yeah, it's a better picture, and it actually reflects what the fishermen said was on the ground. You know, when they were catching queen scallops in their king scallop gear during the king scallop season, they've always said where the queen scallops are, and they are proof right.
This is good news, but it comes against the backdrop of an incredibly difficult period for the industry. I mean, despite the fact that there might be more queen scallops out there, are fishermen going to be able to sell them?
Okay, well, yes, the market is incredibly difficult. I mean, coronavirus stopped the closed the markets overnight. Markets are starting to open up slowly. The trouble is we've got competition with other products such as king scallops, because while our king scallop season finished on May 31st, around most of the UK, the king scallop fishery carries on. And they found a very big fishery off the Dogger Bank in the North Sea, huge fishery, and it's getting heavily fished at the moment. So there's a lot of king scallop, high quality king scallops on the market at the moment, which is, when you've got a limited market already, it's depressing prices both for king scallop and then also the price for queen scallop and the actual market itself. And the whole market itself is so restricted, and it is. We are gradually picking up, you know, one or two extra buyers, but it's not a normal situation by any means. And the price is roughly 40 to 50% down on last year.
Is this putting people out of business?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, without doubt. I mean, the difficulty is, if you can imagine, you've got a business which has the same costs one year to the next, but then you've got a product which is 40 to 50% down in value. It's going to hurt anybody. And that combined with the closure of the market for the king scallop season, although it did pick up a bit towards the end, yeah, the Manx fishing industry is in a dire situation. I mean, you look at, example, the first day of the season, you think that all the boats will be out, you know, all the Manx boats will be out fishing. I think there was five or six boats out fishing yesterday and five or six today.
What's a normal sort of, what's a normal number?
I would expect there to be 20 to 26 Manx boats out in the first week. So it's an impossible situation. With the same bag limit per week as last year, that means effectively a 40% to 50% reduction in their sales, in what they're getting. So some of the boats have looked at those figures and said, we can't go out.
Have people been selling their boats? And
I think if people could sell their boats, they would. But when you've got a market which is so depressed, you are not going to get buyers. Mm. So, and if you did have anybody that grabbed that opportunity, the price would be so low. The difficulty is that I wouldn't say that there's a huge amount of boats up for sale, although two or three have gone from the Manx fleet. The problem is that the crew have decided not to fish with the boats this year, because the amount of money that they're going to get as share fishermen, because they get a share of the value of the catch, is going to be so low, it's just not worth them going. So without a crew, the boats can't go out.
Do you worry that this is the end of the industry, or could be close to?
We are at that point. We're at a really decisive point now. There will be boats that survive through this, because they are owner-skippered boats, or they're owned by the larger processors. Those boats are likely to survive, but when things pick up again, hopefully we'll be able to pick up where we left off. But there'll be some boats which aren't completely owned, that have mortgages or loans on them. Those loans will not be met, and we'll lose boats. I think that's inevitable.
Did the government did that not help through the COVID period? And you know, did that go any way to sort of alleviating these immediate costs?
Well, the various schemes, it's a difficult thing for us, because most of the boats do not fit the model of a business that is typical for other businesses. If most other businesses, or nearly all other businesses, will have a payroll and have people that are on regular salaries. We have a system on most of our boats where they are share fishermen, so they get a percentage of the catch. So there isn't a payroll. They're effectively self-employed. If your skipper and your crew are self-employed, then you don't have any on the payroll, so therefore you didn't get the business grant, and therefore you didn't get any salary help through the salary support scheme. There was a separate fisheries industry support scheme, but the value of that was based on the assumption that the boats would get the business grant and the salary support scheme. So it was really helpful, and we're really grateful for it, but it just wasn't enough to sort of stop the boats going backwards.
As an organisation, what case are you making to government for this particularly devastating year in terms of support? Because as you mentioned, if you're fearful that the industry can't continue, albeit in a very changed form maybe next year, I mean, are you making that case to government saying we need help this year, desperate help?
Yeah, yeah. Look, we've had lots of meetings with government, endless meetings with government, and you know, DEFRA have been very helpful in the meetings that we've done. It is a matter of us not fitting the ideal business model as to why we didn't get support, as much support as we would have needed. Look, I'm not being ungrateful here. We're grateful for any support that we've got. It just, with our industry, it just wasn't enough, and the boats are really hurting out there. And now, of course, with the depressed market, this is making it worse. We think we've had a hard period. I think it's going to get harder. And that has been made clear that we're only at the beginning of this, and I think it's going to get tougher for the boats. The only other way that we can increase our income is to have a higher bag limit per week. Now, obviously, if you have a higher bag limit, then that shortens the season in theory. Because if you're catching more per week, then instead of being over, say, 10 or 12 weeks, it's over 8 weeks. But at the moment, the amount that they can earn for a week from the weekly bag limit, as it is at present, just isn't enough. It's just making it uneconomic for them to go out. It's a very difficult situation. The other thing about it is that it's not just Manx boats that are in this fishery. There's UK boats as well. And at the moment, the UK boats haven't come because there isn't a market for them. And also, the cost of them coming from the UK to Manx waters to catch a product which is 40 to 50% down in value, it makes it unviable for them as well. So I don't think we have the fear of too many UK boats coming and using up the quota. I don't think we have that. I suspect that if there was a higher bag limit and if there was a market for it, that I don't think it would attract any extra boats, and I don't think it would shorten the season, not on the evidence we've got so far.
Would it not risk the sustainability element?
No, because you're still looking at an overall TAC, an overall quota for the season. So no, it doesn't matter too much how you catch it. You just don't go over that limit. So there's always that controlling factor. And hopefully with this new system we're looking at this year, with catch rates, deciding whether a fishery remains open or not, and on which areas you can fish, that makes the overall catch more variable, but also under a controlled way, and we're not stuck in a system which is not always the best way to fish a fishery. And I applaud sort of government and Bangor for adopting this new system this year. It's real progress, but unfortunately the market, the current conditions of the market just make everything difficult. I mean, there must be, we're not the only industry that's suffering. There must be so many others, you know. So, you know, I'm not saying we're the only industry, but it's the industry that I look after, and it's the one that's getting hit.
Dr. Dave Beard of the Manx Fish Producers Organisation. Geoffrey Boot says his department could review bag limits for Manx Queenie fishermen in the coming weeks. I spoke to the DEFRA minister.
Well, it's not been a good time for many businesses, and particularly fishing. It's been devastating in terms of lack of the market for produce. Preceding years, we've had difficulties with stock. It's an irony that this year we actually start the season with reasonable stocks, and for the first time we'll be able to bring some sort of spatial management in conjunction with industry, and it's as a result of industry that we are in that position. But the market remains very depressed. Information that I've received to date since the beginning of the season on the 1st of July is that market price is down by between 40 and 50%, which is not good news for the industry, although we have had a substantial support package in place, and that undoubtedly has preserved the sector to date as a result of loss of market. And hopefully we can do more going forward, depending on how things proceed.
Considering the fact that UK vessels that we understand aren't coming here at the moment because it's not economically viable for them to do so, would you consider upping the bag limit for Manx vessels to allow them to land more?
Well, that has been a proposition. The Scallop Management Board, which is industry in essence that sends its recommendations to me, came up with a comprehensive list of recommendations prior to the start of the season. I accepted most of those, and I wanted to have a review of the market situation before we made any further decisions. However, I have undertaken to look at this, and the management board are reviewing it on a 14-day rolling basis. But it's a difficult conundrum. For once we've reasonably stocks available and we've got this spatial management going on and we've opened some closed areas and we're working with industry to ensure that we don't go and attack all the stock, as it were.
Environment, Food and Agriculture Minister Geoffrey Boot. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this edition via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify. But for now, gurumayu and goodbye.